Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Krumrey. Thank you for tuning in. Alaska House lawmakers made a few changes to a high-priority education bill during a marathon floor session on Monday. House Bill 69 includes a $1,000 boost to basic per-student funding. House leaders added a variety of policy changes to the bill in the hopes of avoiding a veto from Governor Mike Dunleavy. House Minority Republicans spent Monday trying to modify the bill further with dozens of amendments. Nearly all of them were rejected. But Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe says it's an important part of the process.
It's a little bit frustrating, but we still have to move on and get our wishes known and get our district's wishes known. We all speak for 18,300 people.
Three amendments, all from minority Republicans, had made it into the bill by the time the House adjourned for the evening. All made relatively minor changes. One removed non-binding language saying nothing in the bill or the state constitution should be seen as allowing an education voucher system. Another would allow charter schools to appeal to the State Board of Education when local school boards terminate their contracts. A third would place a greater emphasis on growth-based testing and evaluating schools. Lawmakers were expected to hear several more amendments and possibly take a final House vote on the bill this afternoon. And according to a press release from the U.S. Department of Agriculture today, the Merit-Based Protection Systems Board issued a stay on the termination of U.S. Department of Agriculture probationary employees, which includes Forest Service workers. The press release says that by tomorrow, the department will place all terminated probationary employees in pay status and provide each with back pay from the date of termination. We expect more information on the story as it develops. No one was hurt in a fire at the Zantakahini campus in Juneau earlier today. But as KTOO's Jamie Deep reports, evacuated students huddled outside for hours.
A Juneau school district employee wheels in sack lunches on a cart at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse in Juneau a little after 1 p.m. They're for students who go to Juneau Community Charter School, Montessori Borealis, and Yokosuka Takahiti High School, three separate schools housed at Zantakahini. It's an unusual time and location because the first responders did not give the all clear for students to re-enter the building. Juneau School District Director of Operations Chrissy Germain says the fire started in a high school science class.
Our systems worked as they should. The sprinklers worked, put out the fire, and we had no injuries.
The evacuation left many students outside without jackets or a lunch. Montessori Borealis sixth grader Grace Blair says she thought it was a fire drill at first.
The alarm never stopped going off. So we were outside and our teacher had us just standing there for a while. And then everyone was evacuated and then we had to stay out for 2 hours in the cold.
The district said to families in an email, potential exposed wiring made the building unsafe for students to re-enter. Five school buses arrived after the fire to move students to Diamond Park Fieldhouse near Thunder Mountain Middle School, where families could pick up students. Staff wheeled in white paper sacks with food for students about 2 hours after their normal lunchtime. After being picked up, Blair had one thought.
I want to be warm.
Kava Levy, another sixth grader, shared a similar sentiment.
It was really cold.
While Blair says the whole ordeal wasn't too bad, there were still some intense moments.
Probably one of the scariest parts was seeing Lynette's class, which is another classroom in Montessori, because they were like booking it out of the class, like they were running. And so a whole bunch of kids were screaming because they had heard something.
The district reported Tuesday afternoon class will resume at Zantakahini. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
And a decades-old proposal to build a controversial road between Juneau and the communities of Haines and Skagway was put to rest in 2016. But that just changed. The State Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is resurrecting the idea that's long sparked debate in Southeast Alaska. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt reports.
The agency is launching yet another study to examine the feasibility of building a road and other infrastructure it says could create cost-effective and reliable transportation. It plans to pay a firm at least $1 million for a new study, due at the end of the year. Agency spokesperson Sam Dapsovich says the road project could also make it possible for Haines residents to get to Juneau and back in one day, and reduce the need for mainliner ferries in the region.
If you knock 14 hours or more out of the mainliner schedule on Lynn Canal, you can do a lot better for some of the other communities in Southeast while even improving the service to Haines and Skagway.
It's been debated for decades. The state has repeatedly studied and pitched proposals, including in the 1990s, 2000s, 2010s, and now yet again. This time, the state is looking specifically at the west side of Lynn Canal. Supporters say the terrain on that side of the canal is less avalanche-prone than on the east side. They also say it would open more of Haines to recreation and provide a more reliable way to get to Juneau, which is only accessible by boat or airplane.
In the years when we first came here in the 70s, the ferry was dependable.
Jerry Lapp is a former Haines mayor and assembly member.
It was very dependable. You could almost set your clocks by it. But it's become so undependable, you can't, in the wintertime, you don't know if you're going to get to Juneau and back.
Many see it differently. Critics argue the road would be extremely costly to build and maintain, in part because each iteration of the road would have also required avalanche mitigation and new bridges, ferry terminals, and shuttles. State officials estimated that the version that died in 2016 would have cost upwards of $570 million. That hasn't changed. Dapsovich says drivers would still need to cross Lynn Canal on a ferry. It could also require a new bridge across the Chilkat River near Haines. Maggie Rabb, the executive director of Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, says she's interested to see the results of the new study.
I'm very skeptical that they're going to learn anything new other than the price has gone up significantly in the last decade and potential environmental impacts have not gone down.
Haines Mayor Tom Morfitt says the money used to study and execute the idea would be better spent on, well, fixing the ferry system.
The road that's made out of water works year-round, and it costs us nothing to build, nothing to maintain, nothing to pave, nothing to plow. If you just stop and think about it for about 10 minutes, the economics become pretty clear.
The state said last week it will accept bids from consulting firms interested in conducting the study through March 25th. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And Congress is considering huge cuts to Medicaid, and Alaska healthcare experts say that would have an outsized impact on the state. A U.S. Energy and Commerce Committee budget blueprint would hack out about $880 billion, and much of that is expected to come from Medicaid. Medicaid is a government-funded health insurance program that covers almost 40% of Alaskans, mostly low-income people and those with disabilities. Right now, the federal government pays about 75% of the state's Medicaid budget, which was about $2 billion last year. Jared Kozin is president and CEO of the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association. He says the impact of Medicaid cuts to people, hospitals, and providers would be enormous.
It would be catastrophic, not only for the healthcare system, for Alaskans across our entire state.
Kozin says if Alaskans lose Medicaid coverage, many will have to use emergency room services for care. ERs can't turn people away, even if they're uninsured. And if people can't pay their bills, healthcare costs would go up for all Alaskans, even those with private insurance. Payments from Medicaid cover a major portion of clinic and hospital income in the state, and it also funds tribal healthcare. About 40% of the Alaska Tribal Health Consortium's income over the past year was through Medicaid. Experts say major cuts could eventually force providers or hospitals in Alaska to close. The impacts of major Medicaid cuts would also ripple through the state economy. Valerie Davidson was Alaska's health commissioner under former Governor Bill Walker. She says a big portion of Medicaid spending goes to medical travel.
It impacts airlines, it impacts transportation, it impacts every aspect of hospitality, hotels, restaurants, etc. And it is going to be devastating to the Alaska economy.
She says big cuts could also shutter small businesses who rely on the Medicaid expansion program to insure their employees. And leaders in the Iditarod Trail sled dog race are dashing up the frozen Yukon River right now on their way to Kaltag, nearly three quarters of the way into the competition. Matt Hall is in the lead, chased by Jesse Holmes and Paige Drobny. Those leaders and most mushers are racing with sled dogs that are bred for these long distance competitions. Then there's Justin Olnes. The Alaska Desk's Shelby Herber brings us the story of Olnes's underdog team, comprised mostly of shelter adoptees.
11 dogs on rookie Justin Olnes's team of 15 came from Fairbanks's animal shelter or from other rescue organizations throughout Alaska. And that includes his lead dog, a 3-year-old female named Fly.
She's truly an extraordinary dog. And it's just cool that she also happens to have been a puppy that we adopted from the shelter, along with her brother Tippett, who's also a very good dog. But sorry, Tippett, I just have to say Fly is something else. She is a very good headstrong leader. I don't think she's reached her full potential, and that makes me really excited.
Olnes and his wife Kaylin operate Rerun Kennel just outside Fairbanks, and their mission is to promote dog mushing while providing homes for rescue dogs in need. He says racing with rescues can be kind of a gamble.
When you go to the shelter and you see a dog that may have potential to want to run distance or race, you're looking at its conformation, its attitude, its build. Beyond that, you may not know much. So you're only going to find out by adopting that dog and giving it a go.
While, sure, there are some risks, or just genetic and behavioral question marks, Olna says there's also big benefits to having a more eclectic kennel.
You get a little bit more variety in your kennel, so you're not pigeonholed by whatever line you're breeding. And that variety means that you have dogs that are capable and adept at different things, and you can kind of mix and match as you need.
He says there have been a lot of racing success stories among the dogs he and his wife rescue. But even the ones who don't make the cut get important jobs.
It hasn't panned out all the time. In that case, we might find something else for that dog. Some of those dogs that we have just run shorter distances, or we use them to socialize with dogs that we foster.
When Olnis arrived at the Galena checkpoint on Friday, he said he and his dogs experienced plenty of twists and turns on the first 400 miles of trail, including a sandstorm. But they're in good spirits.
As many folks talk about the Iditarod Trail as being an emotional roller coaster, that's definitely been the case so far. But overall, it's been a great experience. It's an amazing country, and I'm very happy to be out here.
Olnis's team isn't leading the pack this year, but his main goal is to finish in Nome with all dogs healthy and happy. Secondary to that, he just wants to showcase all the talent and potential that was previously hidden away in a...
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 37 degrees and raining. We have a little bit more rain on the forecast for this afternoon, but tonight it looks like it'll clear up with a low of 24 degrees. The rest of the week looks sunny and cold, with temperatures between the teens and just about freezing. You're listening to KTOO.